providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Dana Lyons, where we bounced around to many different sectors. Got Dana's more short to medium term outlook for those sectors in this segment. We're now taking a step back to recap some of the data points that came in on Friday and look ahead to where U.S. economic data might be moving as we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, on Friday, we saw U.S. inflation data, the PCE, come in stronger than expected. Consumer spending was also strong. So this is, again, shifting investors' expectations to more rate hikes or at least longer period of rate hikes, maybe even extending into the summer of this year for the Fed. Now, February has been a big turnaround month after four strong months for markets and really everything. They all kind of gave up at least a month, if not 2 months worth of gains so far in February. Mark, when you take a look at that PCE data and the consumer spending number, what are you left believing, taking away in terms of the U.S. economy and where it stands?
Yes, I think you're right, Corey, that you know, we have seen a very strong bounce in January's economic data. It really began off with the jobs number on February 3rd, over 500,000 jobs. We had that retail sales number shortly after that, 3%. And so today's personal spending numbers pick up on that, the strength, the bounce back of the consumer. The thing I would point out, a couple factors, and it's not to nitpick at the data. The data is undoubtedly strong. But the challenge, I think, is that to try to put into a bit of a context. And so there's a couple of things. For example, November and December, U.S. personal consumption expenditures contracted. And remember, we had that GDP revision for Q4 earlier in the week, and it also shaved consumption. And so and this is the first time that November and December, that contraction in consumption back-to-back months, first time we've had 2 months in a row where the consumer pulled back since the early days of COVID. But in general, yes, I fully agree that after a very weak finish to last year, the economy bounced back. And I think this is given, it's sort of like this, where we talk about the dead cat bounce. You know, you take a cat to the top of the top of a tower, drop it on the street, and it's going to bounce. Doesn't mean the cat's alive. And I think that people, and maybe some policymakers, exaggerating the sustainability of some of these economic numbers. And so that's what I would point out, really, is that in this week ahead, we should begin getting economic data that confirms that January was partly a statistical fluke, partly even with this PCE deflator, some benchmark revisions, like we saw with the jobs number and the CPI, some methodological changes. And we've had an unusual seasonal sort of a mild winter, which is also benefits economic activity. But I think that starting next week, we're going to begin getting economic data in the U.S. that shows it was a bit of a fluke. And so the two big numbers for me next week, the ISM services. And the reason I point out ISM services, because if you remember on February 3rd, we had a strong jobs data. We also, shortly afterwards, got, like 90 minutes later, we got the service ISM. And when I look at a chart, that seems to be when the markets had the most dramatic reaction, not just on the jobs data, because nobody really believes that 500,000 jobs created in 1 month is really sustainable in the U.S. But we had that ISM, which was much stronger than expected as well. And I think that's when people really reversed themselves. And so this time we should be looking for a decline in ISM services and a big pullback in auto sales. This will set the stage for the following week, March 10th, when the U.S. reports the employment data. And after reporting over 500,000 jobs in the month of January, here in February, it looks like it's going to slow down to about 200,000 jobs. And the 200,000 jobs still sounds okay compared to where we were, say, in 2018 and 2019. But it would be the slowest, if that's true, the 200,000 estimate, if that's accurate, that would be the weakest jobs growth since the end of 2020. So I think we're in the tail end. I'd say that the bulk of the move is behind us. You think about what's happened to like the U.S. two-year yield. It's gone from about almost 4% before that jobs report earlier this month to today we're getting to almost 4.85. And I think you're right, Corey. The market has pushed back the and really converged with the Fed's view and maybe gotten ahead of the Fed in that the Federal Reserve instead told us in December they thought 5.25 was really where the median was coming in at. And now the market is thinking 5.5, maybe 5.75 peak Fed funds. And you're right as well that they've pushed it out, not just a Q2 thing, but probably into Q3.
Well, Mark, it's really an interesting picture because if you think back to last year, especially the second half of last year, most people had seen those two negative quarters of GDP the first part of the year. They saw the yield curve inverting. They saw credit card expenses going up double digits. They saw bankruptcies and failed loans going up. We saw the housing market crash. And we saw a lot of calls for a recession this year. But if you fast forward to the very end of last year and then the January, with that January effect being positive and everybody being jubilant, it seemed like all of those fears were abated. And like nobody cared that the yield curves were inverting. Nobody cared that money supply M2 was going down. They act like good times are here again. And we're not even just going to have a hard landing or a soft landing. We're not even going to have a landing. We'll just keep on flying higher. That's quickly reversed in February. So what do you make of the narrative change in the fact that we went from very pessimistic to overly optimistic to maybe having had peak economic data last month?
Yeah, you know, you're right, Chad. I think that it's one of the things I suppose that is sort of characteristic of the markets. I often get, I've been accused in my career of raining on people's parade. And by that, I think that it's hardly ever as good as we think, and it's rarely as bad as we think. And so I think that when it comes to trading, especially our own money, we have to be careful of letting emotions dictate and drive us. And so to be really non-emotional about it, I think it means that we have to cut off these tails, these things that point to sort of an exaggeration of market sentiment. Now, for example, for me, the idea of no landing. In order to believe in no landing, we have to say the yield curve doesn't matter anymore. We have to believe that contraction in money supply doesn't matter. The recession in the housing sector, in particular, really, we're still looking at residential investment. And we saw that with a surprising weakness in housing starts recently. That's continuing. It contracted by about a 25% pace. We have to believe that housing market weakness doesn't spill over into the real sector. But I think the challenge that I think that people have right now, we were talking about this off mic, is that in the 1970s, economists thought you couldn't have inflation and a weak economy. And lo and behold, we have stagflation. Now I think many people believe that with such a, and policymakers as well as investors, that with such a strong labor market, you can't have economic weakness. But as you noted, Shed, the economy contracted in the first half of last year, even with a strong labor market. The UK, it's not just in the US, strong labor market. In the UK, they have a very strong labor market as well. And there, the Bank of England is forecasting five quarters of a recession. Japan, which barely grows typically over the last several years, they often have a relatively tight labor market and no growth. I think the problem that people confuse is people working does not necessarily equal real wages. That is to say that despite the rise in wages, the cost of living is going up faster. And so consumption, how are people making ends meet? Well, I think three ways, and all three of them are terribly limited. Credit card usage. We're near a threshold of credit card usage, and delinquency rates are rising. People had also previously borrowed, when they could, take equity out of their homes. That's a sort of borrowing from the past. That game is up, even though mortgage rates have fallen a bit, say, over the last several months. In the past 3 weeks, they're up. And that a large number of Americans no longer have equity in their homes that they own. And the third way, of course, is by drawing down savings. And I know when you look at aggregate savings, it still looks okay in the U.S. And even after you saw, with today's numbers, you can see what happened. spending outstripped consumption. Income was weaker than expected, rising 0.6. Consumption rose 1.8%. So you know that that partly means that the savings rate went down, which means it's a sort of a limited, it's not sustainable, it's a limited gain there. So I think that we will see the consumer pull back. I think that that retail sales number up 3% is not going to be repeated. I think we might have seen that maybe one or two other times in our careers. And so the little takeaway, I think, is that the kind of strength that we've seen in January, unlikely to be repeated. And this could begin, I mean, so what this tells me is that interest rates are probably near a peak. We might not be there quite yet. I think a lot of people want to see a 5 handle on our 2-year yield. Like I mentioned, we're at about 481, 482 today. So maybe there's a little bit more gas there. We've already gone up almost 80 basis points. And I think that means that people probably, when we see interest rates peak, I think that's when people will begin trying to pick a bottom again to the stock market.
How does this all carry over to the market then? Because if we have some weak economic data coming up, that does shift expectations to less rate hikes. But if we then actually have a truly weak economy, a consistently weak economy, and if investors or consumers are truly running out of money, it's not like we just had a good earnings season. So then you would assume that the companies continue to do worse. Could we finally be in an environment where bad news in terms of U.S. economic data actually pushes markets down rather than the opposite, the bump coming for the markets?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think that at least initially, just because you see the peak in interest rates doesn't really necessarily mean you want to go out and buy stocks. On the other hand, the stock market is terribly terribly efficient anticipatory mechanism. Stock market peaks before the end of a recession. As the market begins anticipating not the earnings from past quarter, but from the future earnings. And so I think there is this time, and I think this is what makes it challenging to try to trade around the inflection points in the economy. But generally speaking, I think interest rates, the rising interest rates, what I'm watching for then is a breakdown of that correlation between rising interest rates and a falling stock market. When I see that correlation beginning to break down, that's when I know that we're going to be in a new paradigm.
Well, Mark, along with rising rates, we've seen a rising greenback. The U.S. dollar at the time of this recording is up around 105.15, and that's a far cry from where it was just a couple months back, where it was down at 100.82. So it's had a big move. Some of that is because of Fed policy and because of this economic data, and some of it's also the counterbalance between what's happening in the dollar versus other currencies. What do you make of the dollar continuing to creep higher here and pressuring other markets?
Yeah, no, I think we've had an important move here this week. I had been initially looking, as we had that jobs data, I thought we'd go up 103.80, 104. And then as we got above there, we've been up to 105.30 today. That's the next chart point. But above there, I think there might be potential to 106 to 106.50. You've got some retracements, the sort of the 38.2% retracement of the dollar's sell-off since the end of last September. And you also have the 200-day moving average coming in there. But when you see, to your point, we've gone up 500 points on the dollar index. And I'm suggesting that, yeah, there's, you know, it's sort of like going to a party late. And there's still some punch in the bowl, but it's almost midnight.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. Very interesting comments. And again, a very interesting month where we did see everything turn around pretty much on February 2nd. And there are a number of markets that have gone almost straight down this whole month. It's been on the back of stronger U.S. data and rate hike expectations. And remember, we had the Fed early on this year or early on this month. Still have to wait a little bit for their next meeting. But overall, I think this month really reminded people that we're not out of the clear in any aspect for the markets, especially. Mark, thank you, as always, for your time. Great chatting with you on this weekend show. We'll chat with you again next week. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.